Dan, I've started recording. So,
okay.
So let me say something in Hebrew, and then I know you speak Hebrew somewhat.
Right? I'm not going to talk in Hebrew at any
point. No, you're not. But I know you do speak, so you know that I'm not saying that you're an idiot or something.
That's all right. I am an idiot or something.
Okay. למאזיננו, לא יודע באיזה שעה אתם שומעים את זה, אבל נמצא איתי דן דובנו. אני תכף אציג אותו גם באנגלית, אבל הפרק הזה כולו הוא באנגלית. Hey, Dan Dubner,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
I will give a short introduction, right?
Good. Facts are not relevant anymore. Alt facts.
Okay, so I think you're best known as one of my biggest admirers.
Yeah, that's it's always been true. And so I actually don't think that people know to the extent that that's understatement. I think that that's part of the problem. Part of the problem is that you don't really know how to get the respect that you have so richly deserved. And finally, you know, I feel the more you give me an opportunity to worship at your feet, the happier I think everyone is.
Okay, so now alternative facts. Dan Dubno, also known as Digital Dan, you were a producer on CBS. Is that correct?
Yes.
I see behind you for way too long. I see behind you on the wall a couple of Emmys. Is that 1, 2, 3?
Is this Emmys? You know, it's so interesting that I subtly put them there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
Some may have been mine, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. So you won 4 Emmys for your work on the first and second Gulf War, right?
I got like 16 nominations for things that I thought were much better than the things I actually won Emmys for. But I got Emmys for, I think, Princess Diana's death.
Oh, wait. She's not. So before she died, I don't know if you know. No. So I've been going deep into QAnon lately,
and
I
you have been.
And I found out that what's his name, a Trump's kid, whatever his weird name is actually Diana's kid because they share the same hairdo.
Oh, so you're not besmirching that poor young man Baron who is
Baron. Yeah. Yeah, I've seen this on all the website that QAnon touts, so I'm pretty sure. That's the case.
You know.
Okay, so you've
done... I believe that alt facts are now taking hold in a very serious way, and they used to be called lies when we were kids. I don't know. It's crazy.
Yeah. So you got one for Diana?
I got one for doing a documentary about schools and how kids are getting a lousy education, which is quite remarkable, considering... We have people who are astonishingly gullible in this country, and I'm, in my opinion. And I got one for the terrible coverage of the terrible crash of TWA 800. I got something for the 9/11 coverage, but you know.
So
and, you know, they say Emmys are like hemorrhoids, and at some point every butthole gets one, you know.
Okay, so you are experienced with American disasters. That's
yes, I was in charge of disaster coverage at CBS for many years.
Yeah, and we go together, what, 12 years now, 15 years, or go back?
It feels so much longer.
Yes. And you that know? Was one of the biggest disasters ever.
Yeah.
The reason I wanted to talk to you is, you know, I'm spending some time on social media, as the young folks call it this day. And I see a huge gap between the way Americans view what happened last Wednesday on Capitol Hill and how Israelis view this. So I would like, there's something very substantial and horrifying for American citizens that is being portrayed by Americans, by Americans, while Israeli goes like, huh, maybe someone deserved it. You know, there were some...
Really?
It's yeah. Oh. It's like, okay, now this happened, but it's not a big deal, is it? Like, you know,
you guys do benefit from the strange reality, I suppose, of having quite a number of your own leading presidents, prime ministers who've been accused of sex crimes, for example. So by now, what we're doing, we're trying to catch up to you guys. I mean, you guys are so out front.
When you're saying you guys, you know, I am now also an American citizen. I don't know if you know that, but
I see the standards under Trump have fallen precipitously. but that's good to know.
Yeah,
that's good to know. You should be therefore impressed that we are trying to make new ground in American history, because not only did the president so deservedly get impeached twice now, but there was rioting when I went to junior high school, when I first went my first day, when I showed up, kids were throwing tables and chairs out the window of my junior high school before I even went into the building. And had I known that kind of behavior would transfer into the capital of the United States, I'm not sure I would have been so eager to have continued our education here. New Zealand, which seems to handle the world a lot more intelligently than we have, they don't seem to do these things. You know, they may have shit running around their capital, but they do not.
So let me ask you, let's get serious for a second. It's a pivotal point. I think Israeli kind of figure out 9/11 as like a pivotal point. Is what happened Wednesday or like the last week, is this something comparable?
Yeah, I think it is comparable in the sense that nobody expected 9/11 to happen. And I don't know anybody who... could have expected this to have happened in the Capitol. We pride ourselves on not having bitachon everywhere in, you know, security and over security. And I mean, we do take off our shoes and at the airport, and we do, as you know, take airplane security absurdly, not to a good way, but to an absurd way, because, you know, they think I'm going to use mouthwash, too much mouthwash on a plane, so I can't, you know, take the liquid or this, the toothpaste is going to explode in the United States. So we are, we're kind of novices when it comes to security, really. I mean,
not specifically with security. I mean, Capitol Hill has, like, you know, it's a metaphor, right? For
it is. It's absolutely. It's. If you think about this special spot, I don't know many people who grew up in this country who studied American history who don't feel all weepy inside when they get inside the Capitol or go to Gettysburg and feel, a profound sense of awe, but sadness also, because they're in the same place where Lincoln tried to bring us together after a terrible, terrible, horrible war that many of us thought was over. Doesn't seem to be when they're carrying the lost battle flags into the Capitol this week. We have, the reverence that a Jewish person feels going to the Kotel, the Western Wall, is kind of the reverence that an American feels going into the Capitol, certainly into the White House also. There have been riots before, and I mean, Andrew Jackson's inauguration was a riot in his house. But that's because everyone wanted to come in and get free stuff. And there was a big banquet and everyone felt it's the people's house. So the people are going to go in and they rioted. It's a very different thing, however, to have an armed insurrection that has been carefully crafted, moved, promoted by you know, Fox, Murdoch, Vladimir Putin's Russian friends posting all kinds of fascinating stuff. There's no shortage of imbeciles in our country, and they certainly came out, but they were brought out. They were brought out by people who swear to uphold the Constitution of the United States, and then did everything they could to shred it, and it was heartbreaking. Yeah,
you know, I saw on pictures that were put on online that day, people with Nazi shirts.
Oh yeah,
yeah, and there's a huge gap between how Israelis view this, as far as I can tell, and the Jewish diaspora in the U.S. Right, and I think I can sum it up into I'm gonna do a terrible job by doing the TLDR.
It's what I'm expecting.
The American Jew has always felt guilty that he's not dying off in Israel, you know, planting eucalyptus. Wait, let me finish.
Please.
Yeah. And is not fighting a war for their country. And this has been stressed upon by the Israelis by siphoning money in, right? And over the last, I would say, 5-6 years, there has come a realization that some of the people that the American Jews are giving money to or supporting are morons at best, and are white supremacists in themselves, at worst, and now there it comes to a clash. On the other side, the Israelis don't understand what it is to be a minority. Therefore,
they have no clue about American life, I think.
Yeah, no clue about American life, except for maybe, you know, as one taxi driver once told me, you know, in the 90s, I rode route number one from San Francisco to L.A. And I got to tell you, I was not really impressed. So that was his thing of view of America. So the Israelis don't understand what's the big deal. Okay, there are some right wings. Okay, but you know, we are, you know, controlling another nation for a while now. We understand that sometimes those things happen, and if there are Nazis on the Capitol, there's a fringe, and we can go and I've seen a bunch of Israelis wave the Israeli flag on Capitol Hill last week. So that's the big difference. Yeah.
Well, I didn't see a lot of those interesting folks. I did see a lot of the Nazis and fascists and that people, you know, during the Civil War was fought incredibly close to Washington, D.C. I mean, the army of the Potomac, the Virginian folks have a battle flag that denotes defeat to the rest of the Northerners, but to the South, it means to some that the South will rise again. And the fact that somebody brought not just one, there were multiple losing Civil War flags in the United States Capitol, something that never occurred during the Civil War, is beyond appalling. And it basically represents to Americans suppression of blacks, but it also suggests race war and insurrection and
line dancing, because you're not talking about the good stuff that came out of the South, right? Like, you know, country music, and tea with molasses, and a great cotton. Accent.
Cotton. Cotton. Yeah. Cotton was a really big thing. Yeah.
Yes. Well, the cotton mill was the thing that basically, you know, sped the U.S. into the 20th century, right? Automation.
If it wasn't for cotton, they wouldn't need slaves. If it weren't for slaves, we wouldn't have had the Civil War. They can pretend it's all about states' rights, but the states' rights were about the right to have slaves. Not everybody who fought, in fact, very few of the people in the South who fought to maintain slavery had slaves because they were for the absolute richest of the rich, and certainly not all of the people who fought on behalf of the South had slaves either. But make no mistake, it was a fight that when you grow up in the United States, in America, in New York, for example, or in the North, the war, you don't think about the war very, very often. There are plenty of statues to the victorious soldiers in the North. And when you go to the South, you will see statues for and the names of forts named after incredible losers in the South. And all that was supposed to change, and all of that was supposed to be over. And I'll tell you something, and I think it is significant that the day of this insurrection, the 6th, I came back from a horrible dental appointment, and I was not feeling great, but I suddenly found out that Ossoff had won in Georgia, the second senator to win in Georgia, meaning that control of the Senate would be held by the Democrats, very tenuous control, but still control. And I actually found that I had been crying, and I was crying because I thought, finally, the Civil War was won by the South. And the way it was won by the South was Black women voted to end it by returning sanity to the rest of the whole United States, not just to the rule of Georgia, but to everyone. We got rid of the rather ridiculous Republican Senate control. And this will give Biden a chance to do things like, you know, bring medicine to America and science to America again, as if those things are novel concepts. Well, they certainly were in Trump's mindset. He was literally running against medicine, doctors, and science in his last few rallies. It was unspeakable. And only a few minutes later, after I had this kind of relief after 4 years of horrible nonsense, there they were, rioting and going into a holy place in the United States. There were no easy words to describe the shame, the horror, the despicable quality when you tar and feather someone and put them on a rail and run them out of town. That stuff really hurts to get it off, you know? And it was a good thing that they used to do to tar and feather some of these rotten critters because when you do an unspeakable thing, hanging's too good for some folk.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how optimistic are you that this is going? I'll trace back.
Yeah.
My cousin's husband, who's an American, we were drinking beer, I don't know, maybe 6 months ago, social distancing.
Right.
And he was talking about Trump, and he said, you know, I hope there is a shred of like decency in the heart of the American Democrats. And I told him, hey, stop. You know, all we miss here is now the music from Independence Day. like, you know, that speech. You don't understand that like 90% of your American folk are morons. This is it. Like, you know, we would not have been in this situation had they not, you know, voted for Trump. And my deepest feeling is that in 2 months, this is all going to be like distant history. And in 4 years, nobody will remember this. You think differently?
Yes. I think that there is almost nothing that comes to mind that is equivalent to what has just occurred in American history. Nothing. The War of 1812, which was about 20, more than 20 years after we beat the hell out of the British. The British weren't interested in occupying the United States anymore. They were done with us, but they sent their troops and they burned, looted, and trashed the White House and what was Congress. That was done. Benedict Arnold, a famous general who did a great job kicking the British's butts in several key battles in New York and basically kept the Brits from doing what they wanted to do, which split the United States in half. He found he wasn't appreciated enough, didn't like that fact. And then he said, I'm going to betray the United States. And everybody who was taught anything in American history knew that Benedict Arnold was a traitor. And it was a huge idea. And he would definitely have been hung, as his Confederate was, who revealed the plot. And besides those things, this is so far worse than the law breaking that Nixon did that got him removed and got him to resign. It is to have perpetuated the big lie that Goebbels was so famous for having clearly understood, repetition of falsehood, similarly Birria, similarly the you know, this is something that was done in Europe, the protocols of the Elders of Zion, repetitious, horrible untruths about Jews and the blood, you know, using kids' blood. There's nothing to compare it with in American history, the great lie that this was not a fair election. This election was so fair. 61 cases before judges that Trump appointed. I mean, it went to the Supreme Court multiple times. And what's staggering is that legislators may have let these idiots in, may have shown them where to go. It's still unclear to what degree that happened. I don't know. But you have, after the impeachment, though the Senate part hasn't been dealt with yet, after that, these guys, these clowns on Fox television, some of the senators like Senator Graham, who are just despicable, just keep perpetuating lies that they know are lies. They've said, oh, well, yes, he won, but, you know, it's just staggering that there's a lack of shame. There is complete hypocritical absurdity that politicians will always go as low as they can go, generally speaking, around the world, anywhere. Politicians, by and large, are certainly the worst of us, I would say. Occasionally, you'll have somebody courageous, but it generally generates more press than is real. In this case, though, the despicable conduct of all these people, it's measurable, it's demonstrable, it's clear. You knew it was coming. If anyone was surprised that Donald Trump could go to a new low, they haven't been paying attention, and not just in the past 5 years, because we knew he was running. Everyone thought Donald Trump running. That's funny. And it's kind of like a gag, like, you know, the British voted for, what was the name of the boat they decided, Bodie McBoatface.
Yeah.
When people are given a chance to vote on something, they will often pick something sarcastic or humorous or snarky.
So
yeah, go ahead.
Ask you one thing.
Israelis, lot of them, lot of semi-intelligent Israelis claim that Trump is the best president that Israel has ever witnessed as a U.S. president.
Yeah, that's so wonderfully humorous to me. But
yeah, tell me why.
For many reasons. There's tactics and there's strategy, and to tell an Israeli that there are tactics and strategy is kind of insulting, because everybody who's half decent has gone through the military and has learned about tactics for sure, and has heard about strategy. With Trump, he is representing no strategy related to Israel in the long term, and just doing tactical efforts. And one of the reasons he's gotten along so well with your indicted but not yet fully convicted prime minister, who has a good history of being a tactician without any regard to long-term strategy, in my opinion. What's going on with Israel that made Trump so wonderful? Oh, Abu Dhabi and Dubai, critical countries for national security for the Middle East, have agreed. I mean, that's a joke. Critical countries for a little trade, a little commerce, but you know, the leaders of these countries are known for high moral standing and ethics in the running of criminal enterprises that they have. It's not going to transform the Middle East in the way Israelis hope. Israelis are always optimistic about, you know, trivial little things. They think that the Palestinians have disappeared and gone away. And yeah, you know, you can pop out as many kids as you want, but you still have millions of Palestinians whose issues and concerns and lives have not been addressed by anything. And Trump has done everything to adopt the Adelson approach, which is screw him. And Israelis are going, yeah, that's a good idea. That's good. That's it. Screw them over. That's fabulous. You know, but unfortunately, it's not wise. It's not strategic. It's not thoughtful. It's not kind. And it's not legal. And I'm watching Jewish children that I happen to, I was going to say, happen to own, though none of them would think they're owned by me, who I've paid hundreds of thousands of dollars to get them a nice, good Jewish education, who went in thinking land of milk and honey and now think boycott, divest.
They do?
Yeah, they do. They do. I have lost many, many Jewish friends' friendship because I still support the Zionist idea. And I am deeply troubled by the cruelty of the Israeli approach to the rest of the world, basically screw you. And it's understandable where it comes from. I mean, the United Nations has not been known for dealing with Israel in any good faith or in any fairness. On the other hand, in the past 4 years, Israel has moved to an abyss, and they're hanging off a cliff, but saying the weather's great. You know, it's never been better. We're doing great here. You know, I support a capital of Jerusalem for Israel, and I support a capital for the Palestinians in Jerusalem as well. And if people in Israel would show any consciousness that there is a Palestinian situation, concern, people, you know, I know I'm pissing off a bunch of friends. Even when I mentioned this casually on Facebook, casually mentioning that, you know, they had 3 months to prepare for the Friday insanity in Gaza, the protests and the kites on fire and the terrorists sneaking through the protesters. And I wrote about it, and people who are part of the community of friends that we're part of said, we never liked you very much anyway, Dan, and that's okay. I respect that. That's not stupid. That what they weren't respecting about my point was that Israel might have thought out something better than shooting people with sniper rifles. Yeah, it pains the hell out of me.
Yeah, well, I want to go. So here's the thing that what I'm hearing is, and I'm going back to his Trump before he threw it, is whenever I'm saying, hey, you know, I'd support anyone who's not a neo-Nazi at this point. And they go like, what are you talking about?
What neo-Nazis? Yeah.
His daughter's Jewish. This is what I'm getting.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. His daughter's Jewish.
Yeah.
Well, he also happens to be a not a very nice human being. If you say he's a landlord, when I was growing up, if you said he was a landlord, people would spit. Nowadays, I guess that no longer has the same curse that it had. To me, it's the people in Florida that are absolutely astonishing. The Jewish people in Florida that sort of went into life knowing there was something that happened during the Second World War that wasn't really great for the relatives. They don't really kind of remember. There was something about gas, maybe trains, Auschwitz. It's insane to me that the Florida Jewish population is so disconnected from their own history to forget that the racism, the unbridled racism that Trump was espousing from day one, Mexicans are racist, murderers. I mean,
the one thing interesting to me that, you know, I don't know if you remember, but in the 1990s, Trump interviewed for Playboy. I don't know if you've ever read this, but he was
talking. It's interesting. I only went for the scratch and sniff articles.
I'm
joking.
I went for the boobs, but I also read some of the stuff. So
there
was an article where he praised the Chinese government massacre of peaceful pro-democracy. He said,
what a surprise.
You know, yeah. He said that they almost messed up by being too weak, but they got it right at the end.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, that should have been enough, right?
Well, I know you're doing the interview, and I hate to actually speak. Just kidding. I'm not shy, as you see. But I grew up in Trump Village as a child in Brooklyn, and Fred Trump, his father, built the damn place, but Donald Trump, when he graduated a college that he had a cheat to get into, he was running the joint. And I was growing up there, and there wasn't a single Black, Hispanic, frankly, there were almost no Irish people and no Polish people. They only had Jewish people living in the building, and there were some Italians living in the building too. The only black woman who was in the seven buildings, to my knowledge, was the wife of a white guy who didn't show up with his wife to the interview and got the apartment. And they were horrified to discover that they had let a black person in the building. And it ended up that Donald Trump, who we knew about when we were kids, even though I'm not that much younger than that. And what was so astonishing is there was a consent decree, which means he had to go to a court, and a judge found them guilty based on the fact that he pled guilty to discrimination, and he paid a huge fine. And we knew he was a racist when we were growing up. We knew he was a terrible guy. I mean, there's a reason that very few people from his own city supported him at all, because we just don't raise such stupid people in this city. We've been exposed to this pestilence for a damn long time, and nothing he says or does would convince us that he's more awful than we thought he was. He is the most creative destroyer in the history of leadership. I mean, Emperor Nero, they say, was playing a violin, a fiddle, when Rome burned. Now, it's not true, because the fiddle wasn't really invented at that time. But Emperor Nero could at least play an instrument. I mean, this guy
can play ball.
Pouring gasoline on every fire he would set. And he would set the fire, and when you go to sleep thinking he can't do anything worse than he's done today, the next day he comes up with something so much more creatively awful than the night before. And every day you go, you got to admit, the guy is creative. He's terrible, but he's creative at being awful.
Yeah. Well, we've been chatting close to an hour now. I want to finish this with a high note.
Okay. You want to sing a song?
No, almost no. But I know you told me that your back hurts and you had like a horrible dental appointment, etc. So I want to tell you
all this will go away. All this will soon just disappear.
Yeah, I want to tell you a story about a friend of mine who went to a doctor.
Okay.
Okay, so it's not specifically a friend of mine. It's a friend of the family. It's a young boy that had something that looked like shingles, but it wasn't actually shingles, because it covered almost every inch of his body, and it was fucking horrible. Like it was boils, but within the boils you had like a hard seed of something that was semi, I don't know, mucus or pus, but you know, it was there for so long.
Yeah.
It just became like the guy looked like a bubble person, and no doctor was able to help him. Like, they gave him a topical stuff.
I got to stop you for a sec. You really should be a plague specialist. You know, in terms of coming up with awful, you have awful down. You know awful. I mean, you know. But anyway, yes. So this poor kid, yes.
No, I want to give you hope. Right.
Yeah. So, oh, please. I mean, so far I'm almost leaping out the window here, but that's okay. I'm hanging on.
Anyway, he went to one doctor in, you know, South Tel Aviv, like an old doctor. And the guy said, you know, there's nothing that what we call modern medicine can do for you. Right. But I know there's this old woman in Jaffa. You've been to Israel many times, right? So
Sure.
You know that part of Jaffa. She probably is the only one that can help.
Sure.
And this guy, you know, being very depressed and everything, said, you know, I've tried everything modern medicine has to offer, and he went to this woman. She's super old, like, you know, she doesn't have any teeth.
Right,
like 90%, like, you know, 90 degrees, and she's
Sure. That's
horrible. And she goes, like, she looks at him like, take off your shirt, and she looks and she's almost blind and she says, I think I can help. You know, what you need to do is, what I do is I mix my saliva with, don't make a face. So I suck those out. So in order not to leave pop marks, I suck those out. And you know, the mixing of my saliva and this basically will make it go away or alleviate this. And he goes like, well, I don't know what to do, but I've tried anything else at this point. So she goes like, okay, undress, just, and he stands there, you know, it's a cold room and he's just standing there. And she starts with his back and she goes like, and she spits the seed and you know, it's horrible, but you know, it's working. And she gets to one, like really, you know, streaming, like something that oozing pus on his left butt cheek. And she's working on it and she's sucking on it really hard and he farts. And she goes like, you're disgusting. And people like you are the reason the young folks do not come to the profession. That's it.
That's it. Yeah.
That's it. It's a true story. It's a true story, an uplifting story.
I'm sure it is as true a story as many of the very deep scientific investigations that we have participated in. Not enough has been done on studying this scientific approach.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm actually collecting jokes about doctors, so you can, if you have anything good.
It's kind of shooting fish in the barrel, but sometimes fish are good when they're shot in the barrel. So that's, you know, I don't think there's a big problem with that.
They are.
Hati, you know, I don't think the world should be confused by what's happening here. I think we've seen it over and over in terrible histories, but it's hard, even though we've seen dictators and the rise of tyrants and people who make up stories and convince really, really, really slow people of the most incredible, obvious lie. I think that this guy will change American history and how it's taught profoundly, significantly for a long time to come. I was thinking that everything I learned in American history compared to this is so trivial, is so boring that they're going to have 4 years of Trump. They're going to get rid of 4 years of history in high school and just have Trump one, Trump, you know, two, three, four, the fourth year. And then there's going to be advanced placement Trump and people who are going to really specialize in what used to be American history and now the history of lousy are going to be studying this.
Yeah. A friend of mine who's doing his PhD in history told me that, you know, usually you wait 20 years before you start, before you start doing this. So
true.
He's working on Nixon and he says that, you know, we still don't know enough.
We don't know enough about Nixon, but we do know one thing. Nixon understood there was a constitution. You know, we don't know very much about Hitler and Stalin, even though more has been written about them than anything else in history. But one thing, sure, they were nuts. Absolutely, they were sociopaths. They were the worst people. They killed more people than this guy. You know, 350,000 people are dead because of his own incredible incompetence related to COVID. I believe
one day it will go away. One day it will all.
One day it'll go away. But the point that I was making to close was at least those terrible, horrible, fascist, brutal dictators of the worst, worst kind, at least they knew what they were trying to accomplish. At least they knew what they were thought they were trying to accomplish. This guy, what is he trying to accomplish? Is he trying to make America the worst place to live? What is he trying to do? He's done so much awful. Anyhow.
Yeah, I'll leave you with one thing. If you're anti-Antifa, what are you?
Let me ask you something. Let's get this right. First of all, Antifa, anti-fascist, you know, Eisenhower was Antifa. You know, I mean, he led the troops. He's anti, but can you imagine what stupid is? Stupid is people are people who think that there's some possible way that Antifa could have had something to do with they got, according to the right wing, Antifa wanted to overthrow the Trump regime. Okay. What was happening on the 6th? They were getting rid. We won a fair election to get rid of Trump. And what were they suggesting? Antifa created riots so they could stop the change in power? Getting rid of Trump? I mean, it strains credulity how much the idiocy strains credulity. It's just how dumb are people? And
they are dumb a lot.
Yeah. Well, on that optimistic note,
yes. Let me thank you for joining us for a special English language episode of, our podcast is called Emek. I don't know if you know the Hebrew word.
I'd raise a kus to you to
yeah, but it's Silicon Emek. That's the
Oh, Silicon Emek. Oh,
yeah.
I thought you were going for a little off color humor.
No, there. not at all. Who me? Yeah.
Always elegance.
The aristocrats. Thank you very much for giving me the time for your day again. Click the stop button.
We both work at Facebook. It's a shame that I don't get paid for my work, but one day I'll get healthcare, I think.
One second.